Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the 99%, where the real gains are made. I'm here with Marilyn.
Hey, guys.
And we have special guest, Coach John. He is the head coach of the Sonoran Distance Project. He is more famously known as my wife Amy's coach. He sent, 12 women to the Olympic trials in the last couple Olympic cycles. And, has a pretty strong running career himself. So welcome to the podcast, John.
Thanks.
Anything else you want to add about yourself there? You want to talk yourself up a little bit while you have the microphone?
I'll wait to the end to promote my supplements and other various and sundry items.
Fair enough. Yes, got to get those ads in at the end. Today we wanted to talk a little bit about, well, cross training for running, as John is primarily a run coach, but then really how that can fold into how athletes and coaches kind of structure their triathlon training. And the idea for this podcast came kind of twofold. I just did a race and had someone start from about 5 minutes back and then swim through me. And that hasn't happened in a really long time. Where I got passed by a female swimmer that I had like a 5 minute lead on, and then she got out of the water and swam like 7 minutes into me. So I was thinking a lot about how you can kind of use that kind of speed in the pool to translate over to the other two sports. And simultaneously, I was having a conversation with Amy and kind of talking to her about how her training is going to look. And she's been dealing with kind of a series of injuries and not running quite as much as she wanted to. So she's been adding in a bit of cross training. And that kind of had me thinking about what John's approach is to her cross training and how it's kind of helping her towards her current goal, which is working on her half marathon speed. For starters, I kind of want to ask you some questions about her cross training and how you're using that. And I guess also what type of cross training she's doing. So for those of you who don't know, Amy was also like a D1 swimmer. So she has that that swim background in order to have like a really effective way to cross train. Does her being an ex-swimmer like influence what type of cross training you give her?
Yeah, that's a big plus. So if somebody's got another sport background, then I think it makes it more usable. The typical runner, a lot of people end up runners because they are not coordinated to do anything else. So ask them to ride a bike, swim, think that you're going to get a workout out of it is not necessarily, if they've never done it before, most people can ride a bike, but that doesn't mean that if they went and rode a bike for 45 minutes, it would be worth much of anything. Because on the bike, you can coast. You can spend 45 minutes on a bike and do almost no exercise, or you can get a pretty good workout. So you kind of have to know whether the athlete, the equipment they need, and more importantly, the skills to make it of any use. So Amy in particular, with her swim background, the pool is particularly appealing. I know that she can get in the pool versus thing. You put somebody in the pool who doesn't really swim it could be time. You could log it as 45 minutes in the pool, but it may not be a whole lot different than 45 minutes of sitting at the pool bar. If you can't really swim, it's not necessarily going to be exercise. So yeah, it makes a big difference whether they're prepared for something else. And if they're not, that's where something like the elliptical, which is not, it's not a sport of any sort, but you don't have to be very coordinated and you can get your heart rate up. So people end up using the elliptical because at least we can measure what's going on cardiovascularly. It's boring, but it can be effective that way if they don't know how to do either of the other two things.
So if you give elliptical cross training, do you prescribe it by heart rate or effort, RPE?
I usually do it by effort. So if they, you know, so again, I just deal with runners. Every once in a while, I'll have a triathlete who's trying to improve their run. And then we muddle through on the other two sports. It's usually in their off season, like they're not really focusing on the triathlon. And if they are serious, then I usually try to pass them on to you or somebody else, because I'm not really a triathlon coach. So if that's somebody's primary sport, they should have, you know, a triathlon coach, not a run coach. But on the elliptical, I'll often use race effort. So you're a runner and you're familiar with what 5K, 10K, half marathon, marathon feels like. That's usually the most effective. I mean, assuming the person has been racing sometime recently. Unfortunately, sometimes you get somebody who's been injured on and off for so long that their perception of what 5K effort is versus 10K effort is weak. And then you just kind of have to look. I mean, you can see heart rate for most people because almost everybody's wearing some device that'll give you some of that information, and try to zero in to make it effective. So a lot of times if people are doing something like that, they're just as inclined to do way too much as not enough. So, you know, the last thing you want to do, I mean, especially if the cross training is in the program because of injury, is have the person delay their return to their primary sport because they're killing themselves on the elliptical. I mean, like, that's, you definitely don't want that to be like, oh, we would have returned, but you were going so hard on the elliptical that it set us back 3 more weeks.
Well, yeah, maybe that should be a conversation with Amy, because we just swam like 5K the other day and she was kicking my ass in the pool. So maybe tell her to back off a little bit on that. So yeah, I guess one thing that's, I think, evolved with Amy's cross training is now there seems to be a little bit more specificity of intensity. Is that because she's having to cross train more, or like, I guess number one, we've already talked about cross training, but do you value cross training as like, does it actually translate to running? Let's start there.
Well, for sure. I mean, the most effective run training is running. So if you're an extremely durable athlete and there's no limitation on the amount of running that you can do without getting injured, then I wouldn't use cross training. So, you know, if you're just, I just keep piling on the mileage and nothing, you never break, then I, you know, if you can run 110 miles a week, then we go with 110 miles a week. But that's not the reality for most people. I mean, most people get somewhere between, I don't know, 50 and 80, and stuff starts not working so good. And then, but they want to keep getting better and you want to keep building the aerobic base. So that's where I would start to look for cross training options. With Amy in particular, we were kind of using cross training because she, like you mentioned, was having these niggling injuries. So I would say it was pretty unformatted, because I think we were both thinking like, she's going to get through this and then we'll get back to just running. Because I mean, she had years where she was doing really well with high mileage, like, you know, injury wasn't an issue. So I think probably in hindsight, went too long without making her cross training more specific, because it just kept being like, okay, well, she's going to get back to 80 miles a week. So this cross training is just a little filler. And then like things kept happening, I mean, frequently enough. So we talked on the phone a couple of weeks ago about like, maybe it needs to be something more. So rather than just like 45 minutes of, I don't really care what you do, it needs to have a purpose, just like all of her runs would have a purpose. So I think, you know, like I said, in hindsight, probably a little sloppy that I didn't clean it up sooner. And just let her do her own thing, because I just kept thinking she's going to start running more and it hasn't happened. So I think
that's going to hear you say that stuff, because I've had two actually athletes who turned to running, like they're turned into runners, but we use, so there, my primary focus has been building up their ability, like you say, just to run more. And we focused on, especially one of them is into ultra running. We've done a good year and a half, maybe even 2 years now, of just simply building up the mileage without a lot of just not a lot of intensity or too much hard running, just focusing on building that up. But what I have done is a lot of specific work with their cross training to keep them well balanced, healthy. When I focus on the bike, it's always primarily strength based. I think if they're going to be on the bike, they might as well get the strength they need from that, where it's going to be, you know, there's not high risk of injury, or fast foot speed turnover. So if they're not able to do like 200s on the track or 300s, that kind of thing, because they're building up their mileage and they just break down and be too, you know, too hard for them to run fast as well as, but I don't want them to get slow from riding or from running that much and building up the volume. So I'll do just a combination of their bike cross training would be simply strength or power focused and shorter reps and or fast turnover under really light load. And then in the swim, it's primarily just recovery focused. So it's like a 100% just, you know, all of it's about recovery when they're in the pool. And I found that being really, really successful. We've been able to build up to pretty high mileage and seeing them just getting faster and faster. I tried for a little period of time with the one runner to take away the cross training and start to build in more specific into the running. And she started to go backwards pretty quickly. And I flip-flopped it right back to that philosophy. And she started getting not only faster on the running, but successful in building up the mileage, but we maintained the strength and the foot speed with the cross training. So it's kind of fun to hear you say that coming from a different angle. Like these were triathletes becoming runners. And right. We've seen that approach, and you work with runners using cross training as something to help them keep progressing.
Yeah, I think it's always easier to convince triathletes becoming runners that cross training is effective, right? Because they've been effectively doing that for their entire career. Sometimes runners are going to be a little more challenging, but you guys bring up an interesting point where, like, I guess, John, it seemed like the majority of the cross training was focusing on just that aerobic base. Whereas Marilyn, you're talking about how you're using it in the kind of the opposite ends of the spectrum, right? Like, I mean, you're at least gaining strength and or maintaining strength on the bike. And just like an example for, in case people are kind of unclear what you mean by that, I assume you're talking about like some low cadence work and then some high cadence work for the turnover.
Yeah, so it would be like in terms of strength, it's actually pretty short sessions. It wouldn't be necessarily strength endurance because their mileage is so high on the run, their legs are so fatigued, and hopefully sure. Their body shape is changing a little bit as well. We don't want like big quads and tight hips and those kinds of things. So it might be like pretty short reps, like a 45 minute to an hour session where they're doing, you know, 40 seconds, 1 minute, at most 2 minutes of really high power uphill, and it's strength-based. And then on the high RPM, it would be, you know, put them on a trainer because they're not going to have the skills or the ability to turn it over that quickly and lightly on like a bike path or flat road. So put them on a trainer or a spin bike, really, really light load, and give them RPM targets where they're just simply turning their feet over really fast, that they might not be getting that in, say, like a 30 second reps or 200s or something fast on the track, and just 100% about being able to make sure that they're snappy and fast and feeling like they've got that turnover there. So yeah, definitely. And same thing, those sessions might only be 30 minutes or 45 minutes at the most, and nothing more than that.
So if you were trying to simulate, say, 200 meters on the track, mm-hmm. what RPMs would you use on the bike? If that's okay. What you were trying to mimic?
Yeah, 110 to 120. If they okay. have that ability. So it's actually pretty high RPM. Obviously you're not going to run at 110 or 120, but in terms of like light foot speed and under extremely light load. So there's pretty much no tension or resistance whatsoever. And most runners aren't, and most athletes, unless they're quite athletic, aren't going to be able to get to 120 RPMs. But let's say the goal is it's got to be over 105. So let's say like 110, 115. And if they're more advanced and athletic, then they can get up to, or eventually get up to 120. Then to me, it's like nervous system training, right? It's the same as doing downhill strides or something like that. Same thing with elliptical or water running. They're never going to be able to turn over that fast. So we're not really stimulating that nervous system to be able to go quickly. But on the bike under really light load, they can do that. And it's stimulating that, but it's not it's not going to create any kind of injury for them or anything like that, especially in a safe environment, like on a spin bike with short cranks, light load, that kind of thing. If they've got the ability, like you say, to be on an actual bike, that depends on the athlete and if they, what their background is and if they can handle that. If they're really, if they've got a great background, like say they used to be a triathlete, maybe even a pretty skilled triathlete, you might put them on a set of rollers. That would be a pretty advanced background athlete. But like you said, for most runners, it's probably going to be on a spin bike with short cranks, just turn it over really fast.
Right.
And yeah, I think that's the kind of thing you kind of progress over time, right? Like you might start them out at like 95 to 105 and then, you know, if they're still doing this as cross training in a year, maybe they're up to like 130 or something, you know, like hopefully they can kind of learn how to spin faster as they go.
Yeah.
So I guess going back to Amy for a second, so she's like, I think doing a little bit less intensity on the run. So are you filling in some of the intensity that she can't get on the run with specific cross training sessions now? Is that like kind of the thought, or is it still mostly aerobic base?
No, I think we've started to do some of the intensity in either the pool or on the bike. So, I mean, traditionally you're like you summed up before, you know, I would just use the cross training as aerobic something, but you know, in this case, it's becoming clear we can't do everything that we want to. And if we can get in that zone in a different way and keep her healthy, because clearly, I mean, healthy is clearly the key. So, I mean, if I'm doing an ideal thing, I get, like I said before, it would be all running, but it's proven that that's not happening. Like, I mean, after some period of time, you have to accept that, okay, that's not actually a viable path anymore. So if you don't start changing something, then, you know, you're not doing the athlete any good. Just, you know, if you only have two ideas, then, you know, limits the number of people that are going to be interested in your services, because it's like, you know, he's got a hammer and a screwdriver and that's basically all he's got. So she's forcing me to buy some new tools. I'm at Home Depot.
Nice. Do you think with the lower mileage that muscular endurance could eventually become a limiter, or do you think that since she has years of running behind her, that like working on everything aerobically will kind of be able to bring her up to where she wants to be?
I don't know. I mean, I think it probably depends from athlete to athlete. And I would be inclined to think that it's physically not as big a problem as mentally. So like, you know, if you're getting ready for a long event and you haven't done any marathon pace, you know, if you haven't done, you know, 20 miles with the last 10 at marathon pace, it's hard to convince yourself that you can run marathon pace. So it's the same problem we have here in Arizona during the summertime. If people are running full marathon, you know, they want to run say 5:50 pace in the marathon and they've not been able to sustain 5:50 pace in the last 3 months because it's so hot outside that 5:50 pace is just not something that can be a long tempo. So I think some of it was also just conditioning the athlete mentally that, you know, the path that you're taking, especially if it's different than what's worked for them in the past, is going to work. So I think it's, you know, like I said, specificity is definitely a factor. But once you've ruled out the opportunity to do just specific training, then my guess is that the crossover can be pretty good.
Very cool.
I think also a question would be with that is that, you know, it's always been just sort of the traditional known that, you know, people are always aiming for that like 80 up to, you know, 120 miles to be a good runner. Is there some change? Like, is it through these, like you say, trips to Home Depot where you're upping your, you know, different skill sets and maybe some of these projects where it's, maybe that's not exactly like, not every athlete needs that kind of mileage to be successful. I know there's been a few marathoners in the recent years where their mileage is quite a bit less and using cross training, like pretty, I've even seen some of them where it's actually pretty long bike rides, you know, up to 2.5-3 hours, those kinds of things, which always surprises me when I read that stuff, because I would think that they would, then it would start to limit them in terms of like what it does to their hips and their biomechanics and stuff for running. But is that, I don't know, is it changing your, I guess my question to you is it changing your ideas on what might be possible to run a fast marathon in terms of actual mileage? Like, is there room for that to change in the, because it, that's sort of like running history, you know? And so it's like, is the history the Bible, or is there room for it to change?
I mean, there's almost certainly room for it to change. So I mean, that's the sort of thing that I like to see the level of coaching above me do. Like, let them break a bunch of athletes until they figure out, oh yeah, we can do it this way. So, I mean, I think most of the time, I mean, I don't consider myself wildly innovative. I think I try to stick to things that are kind of known quantity. So it's only in the situation. So if you came to me and you were basically healthy and we could just keep increasing your mileage, then that's the most proven path. I wouldn't be inclined to be like, hey, let's, instead of running, let's have you do mostly, you know, something else. Because, I mean, I guess the thing with athletes is like, you know, they only have a limited amount of time. So you can only experiment so much without being like, wow, you just wasted all of my 20s with your ridiculous idea. And I'm guessing that that's why people don't, you know, go too far out on a limb unless they're presented with an athlete that's like, okay, this isn't working. So this athlete is either not going to be an athlete anymore, or I've got to try something else. And I'm guessing that's when you're like, oh my gosh, did he really just run 215 like on a lot of cycling, swimming? So I think it's still the minority, because most of us want to, you know, go through ground that's already been plowed and proven for the most part. But there's no reason to think that you couldn't do it differently. I think, like you said, I mean, you know, it's, I guess, the tall poppy, like, you know, if all of a sudden you have a completely different strategy for training, I mean, until you prove that your strategy works, like, you're the coup. Like, what? Like, yeah. Oh, running coach who doesn't do any running, which, you know, doesn't work unless you're getting great results. And then people are like, well, how much not running are you doing? And then become interested.
Right. Also, the other question that brings to mind for me is, if you get like young athletes, what I heard you say earlier is that, you know, at some point this didn't work anymore. And that my question to you would be, if you're developing some young athletes, say you've got a 4-year plan towards an Olympic trials, or maybe even an 8-year plan with some really young athletes, would this change your mind to incorporate cross training earlier on in terms of long-term vision of keeping them healthy for a long time? So say you even do get up to that 100-mile range pretty consistently, would you say, hey, I've learned from the past that if early on I implement more cross training, that's going to keep them running 100 to 100 plus miles a week for longer? Or do you wait for that to make that change?
I would say traditionally it's some sort of breakdown that triggers doing something else. So I guess I don't have a whole lot of experience. I mean, unless the athlete, like we talked about also, already comes with the skill set, because there's just a learning curve issue. So, I mean, if you're trying to be, you know, an elite, semi-elite runner, are you receptive to learning a new skill, like a new sport, well enough for it to be effective training? So I think it probably would work best if you ended up with somebody who was, say, a high school swimmer, and then they transitioned to running at some point. Like, I mean, Amy's the perfect example. Like, I mean, we can use swimming super effectively because she already comes with that skill set. If she didn't know how to swim in the way that she does, like, then it would be a much trickier proposition to like send her to master swim and like send her to a swim coach and, you know, get her in the water, you know, well. So I think that's probably a limiter. I mean, I don't have any coach, I don't have any athletes who aren't also conducting a normal life, like they either have kids or they have work or they have, so, you know, that it becomes a reach also to learn a new sport while you're trying to do your primary sport, while you're trying to conduct your whole life. So I don't doubt that there couldn't be effectiveness, but implementation, I think, would be a challenge in many scenarios. So there are plenty of athletes that are, you know, so driven that I guess also then some of it is conviction of the coach. So, I mean, I guess I would have, for me personally, I'd have to decide, do I present it to them like, well, I think this might work, but you know, you're sort of on the front end of this experiment. So I can't say for sure I know it's going to work, but I think you should try it. And then I guess that puts down the sort of athlete coach trust. Are they willing to participate in your experiment for the potential greater good? Or are they like, you know, I'm a traditionalist and I don't want to be part of an experiment? That's my gut feeling.
So what if we cross over to triathletes who, you know, I guess the assumption is they're already proficient in three sports. So we have that base down. And what, I guess, so I'll start with Marilyn. Have you seen, like, if you have someone that's strong in one sport, have you seen that been able to lift the other two?
Yeah, I've always been a firm believer in if someone comes in with a strength and a weapon, you got to keep that weapon strong. I know some coaches will take the philosophy of, look, you're already strong in that. Let's focus on your weaknesses and bring your weakness up to your strength. I've always been a big believer in keeping your strength, and then progress the weaknesses appropriately to eventually get up to that point. So like the swimmer that you talked about last weekend, I coach her, and you know, she has a phenomenal swim background. She's a D1 swimmer. And I knew it was going to take a good 2-3 years to bring her run up to the point where we're still in that process, to where her running is as good as what it could be to match the swim and the swim, and same with the bike. We're going to be developing the bike, but I encourage her, and her program is still geared towards using that weapon for her in her racing and in her development, because, you know, for her to be able to lead out of the water, men, women, pros, everybody, and set her day off like that. And then we just slowly develop the two other sports to catch up in the progression that is going to keep her healthy and keep her getting strong all the time. Now at the end of the project, she's a really, really strong athlete. So instead of just letting her swim go and saying like, all right, we've already got this nailed down, let's rush the process of bringing your bike and your run up. And then maybe we end up getting a little bit weaker in the swim. We only lead the age group race. We're running into some hiccups as far as the injury goes on the run or something like that. And then it becomes a little bit longer process and maybe not as successful. So yeah, I am a coach who focuses on keeping a strength strong and using that to our advantage, and then slowly progressing the other sports at the rate that the athlete can handle to lift up to the same level of the one that is their strength.
So do you think in like that situation, do you specifically give like workouts that say like maybe for someone else might be done on the track, we're like, okay, well, I'm going to give you a bunch of fast 50s because I want you to, like, you know, get some VO2 work in, and then we'll only do strides for running, so we make sure you're healthy, and kind of like arrange things based on that strength to kind of, I guess, yeah, keep her healthy while progressing in all areas.
Yeah, so her run training looks completely different than her swim training. Her swim training is hard. I mean, people might say like, why would you take someone who's such a great swimmer and train their swim so hard? And it is for that reason. I know she can nail those sets and she can work really hard. And we've even seen some improvements in her swim, which is crazy for someone who's been swimming that long and, you know, and swimming that well. And we make it more specific to triathlon as well. Like, okay, this is what made you a great pool swimmer, but is your engine coming from your kick? You know, is it really relevant to the pool, but doesn't translate to open water? So now we've got to make her a good, strong open water swimmer. And we can work really hard in the pool. And I know she's going to be able to do that, and she's not going to get injured. Whereas the run, yeah, it's going to be a much different progression. I'm not going to put her on a track and do a bunch of 400s because her ligaments and tendons haven't been able to handle being on land and working that hard. She's got this huge engine from being a great swimmer, right? Like she knows how to push herself. She's aerobically got this huge engine. She knows, you know, she's developed all of those, you know, areas of what she can do, but her structural body can't handle that. So she's going to get on land and know how to do that and have the engine to do it. But her, her, her tendons, ligaments, bones, and everything aren't going to be ready for that. So we've got to progress that very differently and slowly, and make sure that that's done the right way and looks nothing like her swim training.
And you feel like her aerobic base is really supported by that volume of swimming?
Yeah. I mean, someone who's been swimming since they were a kid, and we're talking same thing, like, and we can even swap this around, like take a runner that comes into triathlon, but you know, for someone like her, she's been swimming very hard, high mileage for, you know, like her lifetime, basically. So she's already aerobically so efficient. And that's the other thing that coaches have to be wary of. They get a really good swimmer and they put them on land. Of course, their heart rate's going to be really low, but because they are aerobically, and even in terms of all the other areas, they are so fit. So they don't even respond the same way, but their body's not ready to handle that. So you're looking at, in terms of, like, you know, they're able to handle a lot of work, but their actual structure is not able to handle that yet. So, and even like you take a runner and you say, this person's been running 100 miles a week for the last 10 years of their life, and then now they want to be a triathlete. Well, we've got to develop their swim, as well as we've got to develop the strength that they're going to need to be able to bike. Every runner that comes into triathlon or biking, they spin at like 120 RPM and they don't go really anywhere. They're so fit, but they're not very strong. So you got to make them strong enough to be able to be a triathlete when they come from a run background. I kind of rambled for a long time there.
No, that was good. I was just digesting that.
Yeah. I guess I got more on the topic of, like, people come from, like, single sports and then turning them into multi-sport, which, sorry, I went off on a tangent there.
No worries. So what about the crossover effect, like, in between focusing on, like, running and cycling? Do you see, like, if you have that runner, can you say, okay, like, I want you to become stronger, so I'm going to have you, like, we're going to work on like some more hill running or something and try and get some crossover there to being a stronger cyclist? Or like vice versa, if you have a cyclist, can you say, okay, you're pretty strong on the bike and we want to get you to run faster. Can you use the bike that there are that tool to help the run?
Yes, John.
I'm just kind of throwing it out there. I don't know if John, if you've coached any runners that came from a cycling background or,
I don't. I mean, like I said before, I usually end up with triathletes who want to improve their run section. So so usually they want to focus on, I mean, they're maybe in their triathlon off season and they want to focus on, you know, running with runners and having a running coach. So usually the other sport is on the back burner because they're trying to focus on the run. So I haven't really tried to integrate things that I would do on the run because they've come just for the run, basically.
Gotcha. Do you see a degrading in the running if they are, like, say, riding or swimming too much?
I mean, everybody's got a volume at which they can't handle anymore. So it seems like the pool beats people up less, than if they go out and ride, you know, 80 or 100 miles, especially in a group and they're going fast. So, I mean, I think it'd be hard to come off a really hard, long ride on Saturday and then excel at your long run on Sunday. So
that's every weekend. What are you talking about?
Exactly. Which is why I, like, you know, I mean, as a run coach, I mean, when I look at your, Jesse, your race schedule, it's like, what the hell? Like, I mean, how is this even a sport that they expect these people to do this month after month after month? Like, you know, multi Ironman in a year? Like, I mean, is the idea to make you all explode? Or so, I mean, I have strong bias.
Well, that's fair. But yeah, I mean, you know how it goes though. It's like the actual running of a marathon and an Ironman is nowhere near the strain of running an open marathon. I mean, just the muscular load of running an open marathon is so much higher because you're running so much faster in theory anyways.
Yes. Yes, everybody would like to, but I don't know. I mean, yeah, I mean, I guess it depends what level you're talking at, but it's still, it's a lot. It can be fairly impressive.
So I guess let me pose that same question to you, Marilyn, about like the interplay of riding and running. And do you, let's say you have a strong cyclist, do you use that to bring up their run?
No. I think cycling, like other than using it in the way, like if someone came to me and they said, I want to be a pure runner. So the two ways that I talked about that I use it would be the two ways I found it to be effective. And it's like, so it's not very much in terms of the actual total load of the week, right? It's like maybe two, maybe three sessions and really short and specific. And then it's helpful. But then I feel like after that cycling, you know, if you've got a really strong cyclist and you say, we're going to be a runner, it takes cyclists a long time to become a good runner just because running is eccentric load. You need a big range of motion in your hips and your hamstrings. You need to be, you know, light on your feet, that kind of thing. And cycling is kind of the opposite of that, right? We get hunched over, really tight, big, thick, bulky muscles, you know, those kinds of things. So even the lightest cyclists, like the climbers, they're not used to being on their feet that same way. And they do have pretty tight, you know, tight hips and hamstrings and that kind of thing. So is it possible? Yeah, there's an exception to every rule. You know, there's a local girl here who we know who rides her bike a ton, and she comes from a run background and runs really well riding her bike a lot. So there's always an exception to the rule. But I would think that if someone comes from a cycling background and wants to be a great runner, we need to greatly reduce their cycling and just use very specifics that's going to help their running. And we're going to need to really, really, they're probably already quite strong. So we're probably going to need to work on things like posture and opening up their hips and fast, you know, being fast on flat ground, that kind of stuff. They're probably already going to be really good at going uphill for a long time because they're strong from riding a bike. So the design of the training is going to look a lot different than say necessarily like someone who comes from a run background or something. If we've got a runner who wants to use cycling, I think it's like the two specific things that I talked about, where we use it just as a cross training that is super specific to help their running. And then that's it. Like, don't make them any more tired or any bulkier than they need to be from the cycling to benefit their running. I don't know if that answers your question or not, but.
Man, I've been riding for a long time trying to get these big, strong cycling muscles you're talking about, and it hasn't happened yet. What am I doing wrong? I keep trying.
Well, your hips are tight, right? I mean, when I watch you run, like you're someone who runs like a triathlete, right? In terms of like your actual range of motion. No, I mean, you're a fast runner. You're a super fast runner and you run really well, but like you're light and you're efficient. But in terms of a pure runner, like if you put a pure runner next to you, their range of motion, their hips and hamstrings is huge. And their turnover is going to be like 100+, right? So you've got great turnover, but you're very from riding so much as you do to be a great Ironman triathlete, your hips are really tight, right? And then, and you feel that with the injuries that you get as well. So that is sort of, you can see that. So it's not necessarily, that's why I said, even the lightest and the lightest climbers that come from cycling and become runners. You know, there's an Arizona guy, Chad Beyer, who is a phenomenal cyclist. He rode for BMC. He's become a really fantastic runner. You know, he's been running some really fast times, an amateur level. And he was teeny tiny light climber guy, but, you know, it's probably a period of time I'd be interested to even ask him where he had to, you know, you have really tight hips and hamstrings when you ride. So you got to spend some time working that out. And I'm sure you see that, John, in your athletes as well, if they've come from a cycling background.
I'm mostly just stunned to hear you talk about runners as being flexible and having a wide range of motion.
Well, compared to triathletes,
I was like, what?
Look at them. Like, oh my gosh, you watch a pure marathoner and their range of motion compared to a triathlete running along fast. Oh my goodness.
Yes.
Yeah, I've never accidentally kicked my own butt when running. You know, my heels don't really come up that high. So I do. Yeah, I watch runners do drills and I'm like, oh, I can't do those drills. That's
move that way, right? You know, and they're like, oh my God, I can't do that.
But yeah, so you're also kind of saying like you stay away from the longer stuff on the bike because you're afraid it'll kind of tire an athlete out and not be able to run effectively or efficiently. And so you'd rather have them gain aerobic efficiency from some other tool than the bike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So other than strength or turnover and keeping it short, yeah, I wouldn't do a lot of that.
Gotcha. But I guess, and this is a question for both of you, do you think that there is like levels of crossover from sports that are different? Like, and I guess we'll assume that everyone is like a decently proficient, say, swimmer and cyclist and runner, so that we don't have like skills in the way here. But I guess my thought would be that cycling would have more of a crossover effect for running because it's more similar than, say, swimming. Or do you think they're equal? Or do you think, since it's like we're just looking at aerobic benefit here, that it doesn't matter at all?
I would say it doesn't matter. I mean, they're an elite swimmer's aerobic engine, an elite cyclist's aerobic engine, probably from a pure sport standpoint, are going to be fairly similar. You know, I would think biomechanically, the struggles of transitioning them from that single sport to being just a pure runner are completely different from one another. And the approach on how you develop them needs to be treated as completely different. That's my experience.
Yeah, I mean, I think when I'm thinking about multiple sports, I'm usually thinking more about fatigue load. So I would agree that probably aerobically with sufficient skills, like you can use any of them. And then you just need to think about, you know, why are you using the other thing? You know, are you using it because, you know, of injury, or you're trying to improve one over the other? And, you know, if you get too fatigued in one thing, is that going to have an effect? So, I mean, I generally, I'm not even sure if it's totally accurate, but, you know, think people come out of a pool workout less beat up than they would come off the bike. So like, that seems like the safer one. If we're not, like, if I'm not coaching all three sports and trying to make them good at everything, but just focusing on running, mm-hmm. Then I'd be inclined toward the pool because it just seems safer.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Very cool. So the takeaway here is all runners should learn how to swim. I think that's the bottom line here.
Yeah, there's a recovery component to that too, right? We know that from being triathletes, is that if you're running, say you are running even like 80 miles a week, which would be on the lower end, but you're using swimming as cross training in terms of the, like, what you're trying to train, but there's a real recovery component to swimming, flushing out the legs and loosening things up. And whereas cycling, not as much.
Right. I mean, just the hydrostatic pressure of being in water is good for people. So yeah, I mean, if they even just get in for 20 minutes to shake things out. So, I mean, the other thing, and I guess it depends which part of the country you're in, but, you know, climate wise, I mean, having three sports, I mean, gives you some flexibility training wise. I mean, here in Arizona, you know, your outdoor training window is kind of from 4:30 to 6:30 or 7:30 in the morning, and then it gets dramatically hotter and more difficult. So, I mean, another possibility is, you know, if the person can't run in that window, then swimming or cycling might be an opportunity to get a sufficient workout in at some point later in the day. We're running, like, you know, right now in Arizona in August, like a 2 p.m. run workout. Like, you see people running at that time of day, but I don't usually consider that they're training. Like, they're just out kind of flogging themselves. So, but if you're actually training, I mean, maybe you could survive on a bike, and you could certainly survive in the pool. Whereas your run window in super hot weather is much more narrow than the other two sports.
Yeah, very true. And yeah, I totally agree with the recovery effect of the pool. I try and give, if my athletes can, I like to give us an easy swim after most long runs just to help them recover for the next day. I have a lot of complaints of foot cramps from doing that or leg cramps, but I try and convince them it's better in the long run. Yeah, Marilyn, what other questions do you have?
Yeah, I think in terms of like cross training and running, the last question I would have is, we've been specifically talking about, you know, swimming, cycling, elliptical. Would you consider strength training cross training for your athletes, or is that like a primary part of your programming for your runners?
I guess I think of that as more ancillary training than, so I wouldn't substitute it in, you know. I mean, I guess if you got into something like a body pump class that ends up having a cardiovascular component, but I don't have that many athletes that would sub that in particularly.
Yeah.
So I would count it as, I would count it in a different category.
Yeah.
You know, just like, you know, whatever foam rolling or other stuff they're supposed to be doing to keep themselves from breaking or getting faster.
I agree with that. Just curious. So I've heard of some coaches doing that where they will include like, you know, like some kind of HITS strength training program in replace of running. And I was just interested to hear what you had to say on that. I agree with you 100% there.
I mean, I think that's, we get sort of into, you know, CrossFit sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe you guys will dissect that entity in a whole other time, but I mean, again, then I think it sort of depends on your athlete and, you know, what their objectives are. So, I mean, there can be people who want to be triathletes or runners who are not necessarily uber competitive, like not that they're fast, but like it might not be like their time alone might not be the only reason they want to participate in the sport. So if I had an athlete like that, then I might consider something like that, because I think variety, keeping things interesting and changed up, is a bigger factor if you're not just in it for your finish time. Like if you're just desperately trying to break 3 hours in the marathon, you know, if you trust me and I tell you to do this exact same track workout 12 weeks in a row, like you don't, most of those people don't really care. As long as they think they're getting better and can see they're getting better, they'll put up with like boredom. But if you're a slightly more casual approach, you know, then I find that you need to change things up and keep it engaging, because the outcome alone, obviously process versus outcome. I mean, you're supposed to like enjoy all components of the training or as many components as you can, but I mean, I'm sure we all have athletes who, I mean, the real measure is your finishing time. So they'll put up with quite a lot if that keeps going down.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say for most athletes, that's the only measure, right? I mean, I know maybe there are a few more casual runners, but I feel like triathletes are very much like, what's the clock say?
Right.
Awesome. I don't know. Do you guys have any more questions for each other or anything else you want to add? Marilyn's shaking her head no.
I don't think so.
Yeah. I feel like that's pretty good information. I think, I mean, if we were going to outline the major takeaways, is that, you know, for certain athletes, cross training can serve a pretty good purpose. But at the end of the day, the more specific you can, I think we all agree, the more specific you can be to your sport, then the better you're going to be overall. However, if we're not able to be absolutely specific and we have to start looking at different areas, that there is ways to program cross training that's going to really help you if you're a single sport athlete. And then of course, all of that changes when you are a multi-sport athlete coming from single sport. So I think, you know, it's been a really fun conversation to just sort of dive into small parts of that. I think we could talk in depth about each one of those even more, but you know, I think we've given people good food for thought to start with on this topic.
Yeah, definitely. And I think one of the bigger things we mentioned in the beginning is that, yeah, like if, especially if the athlete doesn't have that aerobic base, this can be a really good way to help bring that up, right? With a lot of different cross training. And then like you kind of mentioned some other ways where they can become a little more technically sound with using that cross training to bring up their leg speed or their strength or something else. But yeah, it can be a great way to help improve that aerobic base if they don't already have it. John, any other final words from you?
I mean, I think the thing that I sort of picked up as we talked is, you know, maybe making sure that if you're using cross training, you know, programming it a little more specifically to make sure that you're getting the most value out of it. And also, you know, allowing your athlete to realize that what they're doing is in fact valuable. And it's not just this throwaway thing that you just stuck in there. Because I think a lot of times, I mean, especially if they're committed to one sport. So for me, it's usually running. Like they see anything that's not running as sort of second best, where in some situations it may not be, it may be the most appropriate thing. So making sure that the athlete doesn't feel like, you know, oh, I'm only doing this because I can't run more. I mean, that might be the initial trigger, but that's not to say that it can't be pretty darn effective, especially compared to not getting the volume in any other way, or even worse, being injured, you know, 1 month out of every eight. I mean, that's definitely no path to reaching your potential. So better to adapt, you know, I mean, bend like a willow tree than snap like an oak tree.
Yeah, and I think that a kind of good point you made in there too is that has to be a conversation you have with your athlete, right? You've got to create that buy-in and make sure they know why they're doing the cross training and make sure they know like the point and that, you know, it might be like a specific strength point, it might be aerobic, but you know, there's definitely like some goal there and making sure they know what it is and then they've got buy-in to that goal. And I think it's kind of like the same thing with make sure athletes do their easy rides or their easy swims where, you know, you might have to convince a triathlete that like they don't need to go hard all the time because there is a point to that recovery session. It can be kind of the same idea as that, like convincing a runner that cross training is actually a really good idea.
Right.
Cool. Awesome. Well, we'll see if Amy listens to this since we had you on here. It could be the first one she listens to. So thanks for coming on. Hopefully you get one more listen that way.
Great to meet you, John. This was really fun.
Yep. Nice to meet you.
All right. Thanks. And yeah, where can people get a hold of you? Sorry, I should ask you that if they have questions.
Me?
Yeah.
A hold of me?
Yeah. Do you have a website? Should they send a pigeon to your house? What is the best way?
Yeah, the pigeon is probably best. I don't have a way. If they go to SonoranDistanceProject.com, then that's, yeah. But I don't have a website. My sorting mechanism would be, is been, if you want me bad enough that you'll hunt me down, then I probably want to coach you. And if I make it too easy, then I have to talk to a bunch of people who don't really want to coach. So.
All right. So they should either.
That's my marketing technique.
They should either whisper in the winds and hope it gets to you, or is there a link to email you on SonoranDistanceProject.com? Awesome.
Yeah.
All right.
I would answer the email so they can find it. They can find it there.
All right.
I'll
cool.
make it a little easier than normal.
All right. I appreciate that. yeah. So I will include that link in the show notes if you guys want to check out Sonoran Distance Project and you know, bother John with questions. He would love to field them all. All right. Thanks, guys, for spending the afternoon with me. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Jesse. Thanks, John.
All right. Thank you. Bye, Marilyn. Bye, Jesse.